Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLaughlin. Jay McLaughlin is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLaughlin and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLaughlin stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLaughlin's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLaughlin's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLaughlin. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLaughlin is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital Z Zibby 20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white open long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLaughlin. Thanks so much.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, and you're listening to Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. This 30-minute podcast features a new author interviewed by me every single day, 365 days a year, for about 30 minutes. I am also the publisher for Zibby Books, which publishes 12 books a year in fiction and memoir. Our books are already out now. You can check it out on zibbybooks.com. And we have a magazine called Zibby Mag, where we have lots of wonderful essays and lifestyle features. That's at zibbymag.com. We have classes at zibbyclasses.com. And I recently opened a bookstore in LA called Zibby's Bookshop at 1113 Montana Avenue at 11th Street in Santa Monica. I hope that you are able to enjoy some of our other offerings, but this here podcast is the basis of all of it and started in 2018. And no matter what I do, this is basically my favorite thing. Enjoy. Lottie Hazel is the author of Piglet, a novel. Lottie is a writer, contemporary literature scholar, and board game designer, which we talked all about, living in Warwickshire, England. She holds a PhD in creative writing from Loughborough University, where she studied food writing and 21st century fiction. Piglet is her first novel, and watch out, you will be hungry after listening. Welcome, Lottie. Thanks so much for coming on Moms No Time to Read Books to discuss Piglet. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be with you. And I'm just envying your library behind you. Just like, what a nice space to be in.
Thank you. Yeah, this is my office. I know. Thank you. It's a little slice of heaven, although I don't know why I always face this way and never, you know. But anyway, okay, Piglet, it's everywhere. Are you so excited? I feel like it's in every roundup and every magazine. I don't know. I feel like I'm seeing it constantly.
Oh, I'm pleased that it's not just you. It's hard to know, I think, when you're the author, if it is as in as many places as you think it is, or whether you are just very much in your own echo chamber. So I'm pleased that you're seeing it.
I'm seeing it. Yes.
Yeah, please. It's exciting. It feels quite surreal, I think, because it's my first book. So it feels a very odd, as if I'm observing it happening to someone else. But theoretically, I'm excited.
I know what you mean. Okay, well, tell listeners, what is Piglet about?
Okay, so I describe Piglet as a story of appetite and aspiration, and it follows our titular Piglet in the weeks before her wedding, and her fiancé confesses a terrible truth to her in the few days before they're due to get married. And the novel follows her as she grapples with this and its threat on the life that she's very carefully created for her and for her and her fiancé Kit. And a lot of these kind of emotional tusslings are seen through the lens of food, which Piglet uses to curate her sense of self.
Wow, that's really great. That's a really good explanation. Well done. I feel like this book is one of the best food writing examples. Like, everything is so, like, you can hear it. You can sensory, maybe sensory is the word. Hear, smell, touch. Like, you know, like, I feel like I go to the dinner party and I've just, like, had the meal and I can feel and see myself. And I actually read this months ago, like, when I first got it, because I wanted to dive right in. And I feel like the books that do the best job, I can just look at the cover and I'm immediately, like, sitting back at that table or in that conversation. Mm-hmm. And I can, like, it comes right up again in my brain with all the details. And that's how I feel about this.
Oh, I'm so pleased. I think the cover as well, the US cover does such a good job at that kind of claustrophobic awareness of the food as well. Like, the burger feels very much in your face. There's not much room for maneuvering when you look at it, which I adore. I think it kind of successfully conveys the claustrophobic, delicious energy of the book.
Yes. Claustrophobic, delicious energy. Love it. Okay, so where did this book come from? You have a PhD in creative writing, so it's not like such a shock. But when did you start writing this? Like, why this book? Why these characters? Like, what is the backstory?
The very first draft of this book and another version of this book exists within my PhD. And I was looking specifically at contemporary, what I call food-centric fiction. And I was interested in disclosure, surprise for those that have read it, and how those two can fit together. So I think Piglet is kind of a very natural creative response to those academic preoccupations. But the first scene that I wrote for Piglet was the night after Kit, her fiance, confesses to her and she's making them a carbonara. And I was just fascinated by this character's commitment to domestic routine and to continuing to enact the rituals of a life, even though something had cracked between her and this person, this other person. And that perseverance I find fascinating. And there feels like there's a kernel of truth in that, that I just wanted to explore further. So I didn't know what happened between them or who they were, but I wanted to know, why are we still making dinner? Why are we eating the leftovers over the sink? Like, what's happened here? And so I felt compelled to carry on writing them.
Eating is one of those things that, you know, you have to do no matter what. You don't necessarily have to cook a delicious carbonara, but, you know, you don't get to say, like, well, this makes me think of my ex, so I'm going to stop doing this. It's like,
I think it's the continuing to cook for someone when something's happened, when you have been, as Piglet has been, betrayed, but she continues to outlay and feed, which I find a really interesting, like, what's the motivation there? Because at that point, it surely isn't a tenderness or a feeling of affection or a nurturing. There's something else going on there.
Yes, very true. I don't have that problem. I don't really cook at all. So the idea that I would continue to do something nice for someone who has not been nice, especially in this arena, is, you know, hard to imagine. Yeah. Let me just read like a paragraph so people get a sense of how you write about food. Okay, so Piglet's having her, you know, housewarming thing, and she's insisting she'll cook. And you say, she picked up salted butter, thick Greek yogurt, and cream. The menu was not modest. Her basket was, this is when she's shopping, her basket was already heavy with Charlotte potatoes, fresh herbs, and a Dutchy chicken. It was too hot for a roast chicken, but Piglet had once heard Nigella say something about a house only being a home once a chicken was in the oven. And anyway, there would be salads, one chopped and scattered with feta and sumac, another leafy with soft herbs, new potatoes, boiled and dotted with a bright salsa verde, bread and two types of butter, comfy garlic and Parmesan and black pepper.
There would be cold wine and open windows, patio doors thrown wide. It would all look and taste exquisite. I mean, you just feel like you're there. You can smell the chicken in the oven, and it's like, I don't know. It's all just so well done. Like, you should go into menu writing if you haven't, if you need a side hustle. You should just write menus for great restaurants or something.
That sounds like a great job. I would love that job.
You would be very good at it. I think it actually is a job. But anyway, how did you design board games as well? Like, where? Tell me about your whole life. Like, why? Just tell me, take me back. When did you decide to even get a PhD in creative writing? What is the gaming piece of your life and brain? And how does everything intersect?
Yeah. Funnily enough, I hadn't really considered game design and writing as intersecting parts of my world until I had been asked about it on for press for the book. In hindsight, that is so ridiculous because obviously they're connected. They're different modes of storytelling. But for me, they exist on quite different planes. Like, game design feels like a very head pursuit, whereas writing feels much more of a heart domain. Mm-hmm. But they kind of came about at a similar time. So I started my PhD in 2019, having gone freelance from the publishing industry in the UK. And I had an opportunity to do the PhD, so I was doing it at the same time as my publishing work. And then my husband and I decided that we'd like to try and combine our skills across, you know, various different arenas and try and make games together, because it's what we always had enjoyed doing. And they're kind of both fruited at similar moments, which has been really interesting to stretch creatively in different ways. And I appreciate different modes and being able to commit to projects in different creative ways, I suppose. So I suppose that's really the story. Before that, I was working in an office in a publishing house. So I left that and then started spreading my creative tendrils. But that's a horrible
expression. What area in publishing, what was your functional area?
Nonfiction and mostly cookery.
Oh, well, there you go. Perfect. And tell me more about the games. Like, which games would we know them? And
I'm not sure if you know them. They're quite niche. So one of our most popular titles is a game called Dog Bark, which is about walking dogs. And we have another one called Forever Home, which is also about rescuing dogs, shelter dogs. And we're working on a new one, which isn't about dogs, because although I can see, I think, dog on your couch behind you, a very well camouflaged
Yes,
one.
It's my black lab.
Good canine. Company here. So those are the ones that we've published so far. But like books, it's a slow industry where it's making a thing and then, well, designing a thing, then physically making it and then getting it to people. So my husband runs the entire logistics side of the business, which is making, shipping, etc.
Wow.
To umbrella the whole job, etc.
I made a board game, or I made it and I used to play it with my kids. It was called Time Out. And I like had a whole like shoots and ladders type of thing. Like, you know, you yelled at your brother, time out, go back three spots. And then I would have another one, like, you helped out with dinner, like, move forward, you know. And it was like designed to show them like what behaviors I wanted them to do and what I didn't. And
did it work?
It was really fun. Like, and then we had this flood in our basement and it got destroyed and I forgot all about it. But anyway, but I was like, I don't know what to do from this like template I put on a piece of cardboard. How do you get it into stores? Like, it seemed completely impossible to me. So I just like put it aside.
Yeah. I think it is, because it's such a young, I think it's a relatively young industry comparatively, like niche hobby games. So I think there is so much of it that is still kind of not formalized in how those routes to market actually work. A lot of crowdfunding happens in hobby games. So rather than kind of traditional in-store B2C, sorry, this is very dry.
No, I'm interested in this.
I'm pleased. Yeah, rather than being in-store, there's a massive market that exists, especially on Kickstarter and GameFound and that kind of place for like custom bespoke or luxury board games.
Interesting. So I wouldn't even have to go in a store. I could just have people.
Oh,
interesting.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah.
Maybe I'll bring it back.
Yeah, if you can remember it. there'll be interest somewhere.
Wow. Yeah, I thought it would be cool. I'm sorry to waste time talking about this. I thought it would be cool if people personalized their own cards, like what they wanted their kids to get timeouts for versus what I want my kids.
Exactly. On crowdfunding, this would be exactly the kind of thing you might offer as an extra or a stretch goal. Or yeah, this is perfect.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
All right. Well, maybe I'll email you, you after to get the link in my spare time, bring this back. Okay. So what do you want people to know about food that and food writing and the role of food in literature that they might not know, but that you deeply know after all of your research?
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it, and that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, "This is so exciting." So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, "Well, what should I spend my 2 cents on?" Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
That's an interesting question. I suppose it might be better for me to let your listeners know how I feel about food, which is that it is a language for me in and of itself. It feels like ever-present undercurrent that shapes character. And I don't think that I've learned much more about food, although saying that I like to playfully say I method wrote the book because I cooked all of the recipes that Piglet cooks in the book. And so to try and get a sense of self of her and slip into her skin and her saucepans. But I think besides the practical nature of making caramel, I haven't learned more about food, but I have learned more as a writer that I believe strongly that without food, character is so much less. I think that if I don't know what someone's had for breakfast as a character, I don't really know them, or what they might pick up on a train journey as a snack. I think those details are so illuminating and important to me when I'm trying to work out who someone is and what drives them. And I think that's probably true of life as well. I'm always interested in nosing around at what people are having for dinner, or, you know, what their coffee order is.
I am also really interested in that. When I was in like third grade, I took the class list for like all the parents, and I called everybody's house and asked all the kids what they had for dinner. Why do I do these things?
Also, I'm jumping to actually do it as well. This is excellent. What are you having? Let me take a note. Was there a consensus?
What would you pick up on a train? What snacks would you order?
I think it depends what mood I'm in. I think tea, something with tea, and then I always want something with chocolate, because to me train travel feels like holiday. It feels like I feel like I'm on a jolly of some kind, and so I am never very mindful about whether I should have, you know, several chocolate bars, which is probably, as I start twitching with the sugar, probably wasn't a good idea. So I think it's always, when I'm traveling, and it's weird now, I'm doing some press for the UK version, I have to keep reminding myself, like, I'm not on holiday, like, stop eating chocolate. But that, you know, we have, you know, have a pan of chocolate in one hand and a cup of tea in the other. That sounds lovely to me. That something
sounds
sweet.
That sounds lovely to me too. That definitely sounds like a vacation.
Yeah, isn't it? And it's like, I can't keep doing this every day. This isn't a sustainable way to live. What about you? Are you a savory or a sweet person?
I'm a sweet person. 100%. Yes.
Yeah, me too.
Actually, when I was first getting to know my husband, we were talking about he asked me, like, what's your favorite meal? Because he's an amazing cook. You know, he went to culinary school and now he just cooks for basically me, which is really fabulous. But he asked me what my favorite meal is, which I guess was a question he used to ask a lot of people. And I said, it depends on the season. And he thought that was like the greatest answer ever. Like, but it does, right? Like what your favorite meal is now versus, you know, the middle of summer is a totally different meal.
And also the context in which you eat it. Like, I love over like colder months, anything that can be cooked in a Le Creuset or a pot and in the oven, amazing. If I serve that outside in the height of summer, no. Wrong on so many levels. Yeah, context matters hugely, I think.
Yeah, I agree. So what have you had to eat today?
Today I'm in a hotel today after doing a book club last night. And so I had a really lovely breakfast this morning. I had some nice sourdough and avocado, and I'm by the sea in the UK. So I had smoked salmon. I need to ask them where they bought it, because it was like, I don't know what the smoked salmon is like, or lox, perhaps.
Yep.
Yeah. But it was so smoky and delicious. The salmon was almost starting to go like a lovely caramelly colour. So it's not your regular smoked salmon, which was lovely this morning. And I had that with a cup of tea and a croissant after that, because I feel this is my issue. If I'm away and I'm eating breakfast, I'm going to have maybe two or three breakfasts rather than just, you know, the one. And I haven't had lunch yet. So we'll see what's after.
Amazing. And you cooked all the meals in the book. Did you do it while you were writing? Like, what was the timing? Did you write a scene and then go cook it, or did you cook it and then put it in the book? Like, how did that work?
I cooked it and then put it in the book. I wanted to get a sense of reality of what those were like. And some of them I was already very familiar with, like the pastas in there and lots of the savory food that she makes are some of my recipes that I like to go to myself. But the croque en bouche was a new adventure to me. So I wanted to get a sense of head shaking is exactly right. You're doing the right. But I wanted to get a sense of realness and truth of what that was like, because they're such integral moments for her and the book. I felt like if I can get a sense of reality, I just think that informs the writing for me. It informs the writing for me, I think.
So I didn't count how many meals were in the book. Do you know the number? Like, how many meals did you have to make?
I don't know the number. I was happily oblivious and just among the food.
But there are no, I was like, did I miss recipes? You didn't put recipes in, did you?
No. In the English, I don't think in the American edition there is, but at the back of the UK edition, there is a recipe for pastinaca. I don't think it's in the American edition.
Interesting.
But that was my publisher, their suggestion. I don't know how I feel about recipes in books, but I quite like being nondescript and sparse. Mm-hmm. So to actually dictate a recipe feels like quite a big departure from my usual writing style for prose.
Well, a good like social media thing you could add or something instead of in the book.
Marketing-wise, excellent, yes.
Marketing-wise, yeah. Videos. I wonder if you could take someone, if you could do like a course, not like you need my ideas here, but if you could do a cooking class and you take people through like 10 recipes that you made or 10 meals, you could even do it online. Like,
yeah,
that would be so fun. Like, I would, you know, it's like a total book immersion situation.
Yeah, very experiential. They can go on method read with me.
Method read with you. Yes. A cooking book club. Really cool. I love that. So what are you working on now? If anything, not to say you have to be.
I find podcast reviewers so generous, where it's like they ask the question, they're like, not that you have to be, like, don't be pressured, but also what? I am working on something new, but I'm in the really nice early phase where it feels like a lot of percolation and trying to coax in inspiration. So I have a general idea of what I'd like to write, and I'm starting to kind of snatch scenes out of the air and scribble them down on my notes app and getting an idea of characters. But I love this phase because everything's possible and nothing has yet been written into a reality that, like, well, that needs editing. So it's like, it's a nice space to be.
And is that how you do it? You capture scenes and then piece them all together and use notes?
That's how I start. I start with kind of scenes that have interested me or caught my interest or feel like I want to explore them further. But I'm quite a dull writer in that then I sit down and I plot and then I write and I turn up and then do a really terrible first draft, followed by a heavy edit in which hopefully the book reveals itself as something that's less terrible. The first draft is so humbling, I find. So yes, in this phase, I feel kind of mysterious and ethereal in almost like a big magic sense. And then it becomes ever so practical very quickly.
So you and your husband work together for the board game stuff. Is he involved in your writing at all? Or is he an early reader? Or is this something you like to keep close to the vest?
He's not involved, and that is because I am a real hermit when it comes to writing. I don't really like to talk about ideas until it gets to the point of sharing a manuscript. I'm not a very good collaborator. I like to internalize a lot and think it through quietly. He's ever so supportive and he asks, but nearly always the questions are caveated with, I know you're not going to tell me, but how's it going?
Oh. And it just at least you know he's interested. So he gets points for that. You know, that's good. Yeah. Do you have advice for aspiring authors?
Read. I think read as much as you can. And I think underline and make note of sentences or phrases or words that have inspired you or have moved you. I feel like, especially when I'm trying to make something new, I love reading other people's work. I love watching film or television and absorbing stories. I think that that's such a underrated way to work as a writer, to research and be in the world that you're trying to, the industry that you're trying to be in. So often I was talking to another writer and they were talking about how they felt like reading was a treat. And it's such an odd thing because it is everything. It's the work. And what a nice bit of work to do. So I think, yeah, reading, definitely.
Do you have some go-to authors that you read everything they write, or is there a genre you particularly love?
I don't really have go-to authors, but I feel like I might be developing them soon, because I just read and adored Demon Copperhead by Barbara Kingsolver. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like, you know, the joy when you haven't read someone's catalogue and it's like, oh my God, there's more. Mm-hmm. This incredibly talented author that I can now explore. And the same with Anne Patchett. Tom Lake was the first. No, that's a lie. Tom Lake's the second Anne Patchett I'd read. And again, I was just like, oh my God, there are so many more books that you've written. And now I just get to dive into the rest. I think the genre probably is contemporary, focused on relationships, not necessarily domestic, mm-hmm. but I'm interested in the dynamics between people being the thing that propels the plot. Mm. Beyond that, I don't need anything more exciting to keep me interested in. That's what excites me, what's going on between people.
I love that. You should read Sue Miller. Do you read any of her stuff? I feel like
No, I'm delighted to have another recommendation.
Yeah, I don't know. Like Sue Miller, monogamy, I feel like, I don't know. It's all about that relationship and I don't know. That's like basically all you need in that book. It's about her feeling about her husband. Anyway. Yeah. Okay, amazing. Well, Lottie, thank you so much. Thanks for coming on. Congrats on your book. Are you doing a U.S. tour or only U.K.?
Only UK at the moment. So I'll be in the US for work for the board game. So I'm hoping to visit some bookshops and just say hi to some indies whilst I'm over there, but just the UK for now. But yeah, happy to be doing podcasts. So thank you ever so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. Lovely to meet you. Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.